The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening. Well, you know, it rained all day long, and I was in and out of the rain, and then on my way to the Zendo tonight, the sky turned like orange, apricot, and all the clouds were gone. I was like, oh yeah, okay. It's going to be okay. You know, a little community like this, it's really a gift. We all come from very different lives. And we come here and we come to support one another, to feel part of something, something spiritual. And we could say that so much of what's going on in the city, in this country, in other countries, in this world, is a desperate gesture. A desperate gesture to distinguish one's own life, one's own circle of life, and distinguish what is and what is not for me. And people separating now even more than 10 years ago on the basis of religion, culture, race, sexuality, gender expression. So naturally, I mean, as being a part of this world, I'm thinking about it a lot and what the Dharma has to do with it. What is it that we perceive as difference? What is not me? So difference implies that there's also not difference, sameness, me-ness, what I belong to. So whether it's skin color, or class, or sexual preference, or gender presentation, there's so many ways that we perceive ourselves and we perceive others. People we think are different from us, they're not like me. And sometimes we decide that those people that are not like me are someone that I can't get close to, that I can't know. And that decision is unconscious most of the time. We create an other, an idea in our minds. Or we go to an idea that's already been sitting in our minds that we may not be aware of. That is not like me. And if it's not like me, then I reject it as alien. It's different. And after that, there's disgust, and there's blame, and there's fear, and there's hostility. And that's what I see in the world these days. This retrenchment into isolated groups who stand against other groups. The Europeans against the Africans, the Myanmar Buddhists against the Myanmar Muslims. Same geographical area. The racism and sexism, the ableism, the violence against gays, and the genderqueer. We just have to look at the papers, or maybe you don't look at papers anymore, you just look at screens, but the information is flowing in about this. So even here in a Zen temple, you know, we might look at a stranger that comes in as an other, as not as different from, oh, you're Tibetan Buddhist, oh. Could happen. That we can look into the eyes of another being, another human, and find a difference so striking that we can no longer engage. No longer experience the humanity of the other one. Connect to the same reality of the human condition? How does this happen in our minds and even in Buddhist communities? How does this happen? I think of Ryokan's little poem. Now, Ryokan is the poet that we're studying at this during the study period. He wrote one poem, three lines. Noisy kids lack coordination to catch early fireflies. Noisy kids lack coordination to catch the early fireflies. So, do you know when your mind is like a noisy kid? Allowing our minds to kind of knee-jerk, automatically go to some old, broken-down, mistaken idea. Ideas of the right way for the other to look, to act, to speak, to be. In a way, Ryokan is just really saying what I'm trying to offer to this question that troubles me so much. How can we meet the difference around us? How can we encourage ourselves to be open, to be alive and compassionate? When we encounter something that we don't know, something that's new to us, a difference of culture, class, gender, sexuality. How do we get caught in bias? And this is not an abstraction, I'm talking about you and me. How do we get caught in our own privilege? And thus blinding ourselves to the Buddhist teaching of interconnection, that we are not separate, that we are all part of one, five fingers, one hand. How is it that we can deny the other? There's a writer that just has struck me through the years, Emmanuel Levinas. He's a Lithuanian French philosopher. He wrote about encountering the face of the other. I'm going to read it. The first word of the face is thou shalt not kill. It is an order. There is a commandment in the appearance of the face, as if a master spoke to me. However, at the same time, the face of the other is destitute. It is the poor from whom I can do all and to whom I owe all. And me, whoever I may be, but as a first person, I am the one who finds the resources to respond to that call. Well, he's talking about when you see the face of another, it is a commandment, do not kill. Sounds like the other might be God. Might be Buddha nature. Might be the truth of humanity, of our interrelationship. The other, the face of the other. You know, it reminds me of the street retreats when I would go on the retreats with Bernie and, you know, be out on the street for 4 or 5 days. We'd go to the park, mainly Tompkins Square Park, and hang out with the people that hang out there, that live there, that sleep there. And then we'd go over to the Bowery Mission and eat some food at the mission. There's a little place where after you listen to a lecture, you can go through a cafeteria and sit at these tables and eat with these people that are homeless. They usually smell. And not necessarily friendly, kind of suffering. I sit down and eat with them, look into their eyes, and how can there be disgust? How can one pull away? It's just like Lavina says, the face of the other commands us to care. If we can open our eyes and look into the face of the other. And that can only be done when we stop our noisy thinking. To just stop and behold the other. Whatever we think as difference, we can also recognize the human connection. All part of the same. In Buddhist teachings, we call it the interconnected reality of life. But what gets in the way is our noisy minds, which is probably why you're here, is to quiet those noisy minds. See, when our minds are noisy, we just react without connecting to the meaning of what's around us. And this reminds me of an old story, which, as most of you know, in a Zen lecture, we always bring up an old story. This one is about 8th century China. There was a guy named Zhao Shu. I'm going to pronounce it easily so you can easily remember it. We sometimes pronounce it in Chinese and sometimes in Japanese. He was very precocious and was recognized when he was very young to be a comer in the Zen tradition. And he studied with his teacher Nansen from the time he was 18 for 39 years until his teacher died. Then he was 57 years old and decided to go around China. And he said, even if a child of 7 knows better than me, I will study with them. even if a person of 100 years wants to study with me, I will teach that person. Looking into the face of the other and being willing to learn from a child and to teach an old person. There's a vast openness. So when he was 80, he decided to settle down. And he settled down into a broken down old temple that had been abandoned. It was really kind of falling apart. There are descriptions, you know, holes in the roof and so forth. In the province of Joshu. That's how he got his name, because in those days, you know, the old person on Joshu. So we'd call this the old lady of Soho. Or Lafayette. Oh, have you been to Lafayette lately? So he had by this point become very well known in China. So he was like, you know, big gun. Hardly anyone in his temple, but well known. So one day, a traveling monk came to Joshu, and he said, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Joshu, but now that I've come here, I just see a simple log bridge." Joshu said, "Yeah, you just see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge." The monk said, "Well, what is the stone bridge?" And Joshu said, "It lets asses cross. It lets horses cross." So that bridge actually exists still to this day. I visited it in province. It is the oldest open spandrel bridge in the world. It was built just 100 years before Joshu. It was a very old, beautiful bridge, elegant. So this monk, you know, comes up to Joshu and he says, "For a long time I've heard of the stone bridge of Joshu, but now I've come here and just see a simple log bridge." So, you know, we could paraphrase that as, "I've come to see this great Zen master Joshu and I am not impressed. Place is falling apart. You look a scraggly old man, probably toothless. I am not impressed." So a lot of times we study this koan from the perspective of the gentleness with which Joshu teaches. I mean, he doesn't, you know, hit him or throw cold water on him. He very gently leads him to see, symbolically, metaphorically, the difference between a log bridge, which would be kind of like the relative world that's falling apart and constantly impermanent, changing, and the stone bridge, which would represent the Buddha nature or the absolute nature of reality, right? So he would do that. But what I'd like to do is get it a different way. Think about it from the perspective of this monk who's like so caught up in his idea of what a Zen teacher is, so caught up in that, blinded really, that he can't see a great master who's right in front of him because of his idea of what that should look like. What he sees in front of him doesn't match his internal fantasy. And we're like that ourselves, aren't we? We think we know how a friend should look, or a member of our community should look. What color, class, sexuality, gender expression they might have. Joshu responds differently. You just see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge. Look. Look into the face of the other. You just see what's already in your mind. You don't see what is really here. The noisy child. You just see your idea of me. You don't see my Buddha nature. You're not looking in front of you. You are reflecting an old idea from a broken old mirror inside of you. These triggers to our internal thoughts. Is that person performing their gender according to my expectations? And that expectation blinds me from seeing what's right in front of me, from appreciating what's right in front of me, the expression that's here now in the Bowery Mission, on Compton Square, in the Zendo, on the subway. You open your eyes and allow all those faces to come in, not according to these slots and your thought patterns. What can we do about this ourselves? We can come to a Zen center or a Buddhist meditation center or any kind, you know, a church. An ability to stop and really see the self. Noisy kids lack coordination to catch the early fireflies. Stop the noise. Calm ourselves. And then follow that wonderful prescription of Dogen's. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. To study the way is to study the self, is to see our hidden bias, to see it, to look for it, to educate ourselves so that we can see our bias. To study the self is to forget the self. To open our hearts and minds, to drop that rigidity, to be creative, to be joyful about life and all of its expression. To forget the self is to be awakened by all of life. So that's why here at the Zendo we offer teachings on race issues. Just last Sunday we had a wonderful panel with black teachers, black Buddhist teachers teaching on what it is to be a black man in this society. We have teachings on sexuality, gender, disability. Awaken us to our blindness about things. Awaken us to our blindness, Cezanne. So we encourage ourselves not to coast in our privilege, to get edgy. And, you know, when we tear something off, sometimes it's a little painful. Some old idea we have about reality. Oh, if we do that, we can be free. What is the truth of the situation? What is this before me? What does this face teach me? Is this person asking for money on the subway the one who is going to lead me across the stone bridge to a recognition of my humanity, of my responsibility as a human? These are some thoughts I had today after I became very angry about an incident. however, I do think we need to look at what's happening in the world and look inside ourselves and teach ourselves how to forget that focused old ideas that we don't even know we have. And in doing that, we can present our face to others. So I encourage you to think deeply about this. It's a difficult time in the world, but we can do something about it. I wrote a gatha to end it. O stranger, I cannot see what is in my heart until I quiet my mind and look into your eyes, and you say, we are not two.